Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
Welcome to the Hollywood Casino Press Box with your host, Frank Cusimano.
Here's the pitch. Right there, there it is! Into left field! Hit number 3,000! A run is scored! Musial around first! On his way to second with a double!
The best interviews and the most informed insight.
And that's McGaffey breaking free, has a seam, and a crease! The kicker can't trip him up! Headed for the end zone! Will it be back-to-back weeks? Yes!
All tied together with the experience of over 20 years of local broadcasting excellence in St. Louis.
Now Stasny gets away from a check to Fabry. Wide open. Brower. Rebound. He scores. Try Brower. The former blockup has given the Blues a 3-2 lead.
Now, here is Frank Cusimano on 590 The Fan and 590thefan.com.
Welcome. This is the Hollywood Casino Press Box on the all-new 590 The Fan. Frank Cusimano with us, our Friday roundtable, the Friday slop in studio with us. Andy Strickland. Andy, good to be with you. How are you?
It's great to be here. Couldn't be happier.
Charles Tuna Edwards is here. Charlie, how are you today?
I'm doing great. Wonderful time. Wonderful.
We have Brian Hoffman is our producer. Whose phone's going off?
Charlie's.
That wasn't my phone. That was my iPad.
Oh, okay. That's a lot better then.
Yeah, that's the difference.
Evan, the intern, by the way, is here. It's his last day here at, I was about to say, Channel 5 at 590 The Fan. He's been a great intern all season long.
He's
a senior
Evan.
At the University of Missouri, majoring in sports management. Sports management. Oh, so maybe be a GM.
You want to be a GM. You know, if you want to be a GM, like, athletic ability is not required anymore, right?
Yes. Right. In fact, it's probably a detriment.
Exactly. So being a former player is not a requirement. I'm talking specifically like baseball and whatever. So you keep studying and you get straight A's, you got a great chance of being a baseball GM.
The NHL doesn't go that way. They're not hiring a bunch of Harvard guys, right?
They're
usually ex-players.
Yeah, they hire mostly hockey people, you know. And if it's not an ex-player, it's somebody who's certainly worked their way up to get to that level, you know. They don't just get hired out of Harvard or hired out of school. Typically, they work in hockey operations for a long time to get there.
Chuck, you want to give us a thought on the passing of one of the greats of all time, Aretha Franklin?
Very, very sad. And this woman was probably one of the greatest entertainers ever to grace this face of the earth. I was very sad and nearly in tears. And I told you a story. Got to meet Aretha 3 times. And yesterday I talked to Steve Shankman, the owner of Contemporary Productions, which at one time was the third largest production company in the world. We're doing a special on Aretha on Monday night. And the reason why Steve was with her maybe 12 or a dozen times was with her also when she made the movie The Blues Brothers. We're going to talk about that. And Steve and I, we recalled a story at three of the VP fairs. I was the MC. So one event, that we were backstage, and Steve and I were talking, and all of a sudden Aretha Franklin walks into this room. It was 100 degrees outside. She owned a long pink dress. Everybody in the room was sweating like crazy, except for Aretha. She said, I want more money. There's over 200,000 people out there. I want my money for my trumpet player, my horn selection, and me. So I'm not going on stage. So I felt, wow, Aretha Franklin.
Now, who's she telling that to?
Steve Shankman. She's telling Steve Shankman, because she knows
Steve. Steve Shankman.
Right. Telling Steve, I want more money, so I got ready to leave the room. Steve said, stay here. But then I left anyway because I didn't want to be in the middle. She got more money. But James Brown taught Aretha Franklin. She did that up until her untimely death. She would collect, the white promoters back in the old days would pay her a check or wouldn't pay her until she left the stage. So James Brown said, get cash. Up until her death, Aretha Franklin was paid in cash. And whenever you'll hear this joke, her purse, she put everything in her purse. So whenever you saw Aretha Franklin perform, I think her last performance was November 19, 2017 for the Elton John AIDS Foundation. They could always tell when Aretha was going to do an encore. because she always put her placed her purse underneath the piano on stage. So if she left her purse there, you knew Aretha was going to do an encore. But until her untimely death, she was paid cash money, Frank.
And wow.
Yep.
Huh. You know, Marciano used to demand that, too. Mm-hmm. But he was such a dope. They'd say, okay, Rocky, we have a check here for $20,000. He says, no, I want cash. Mm-hmm. And they'd say, well, we don't have the cash. And he'd say, well, we got $4,000. He goes, all right, I'll take that instead. Oh, I mean, no. He was such a dope.
No, he would take $4,000 in cash
instead
over $20,000.
Yeah. Oh, that's stupid.
Yeah. I understand Aretha. She can get the cash. Why not get the cash?
Remember, this woman won 20 Grammys.
I mean, when you would listen, I was watching CNN and NBC all morning.
Didn't they do great? My God.
And her music, song after song.
Well,
oh, my goodness.
If you've never been to a black Baptist church, there's a difference. All her songs had the gospel influence of her father, the Reverend C.L. Franklin. And Smokey Robinson told a story today on CNN. You see that? He said, we all lived in Detroit. Detroit was a unique community because you had Highland Park and places like that. Smokey and those guys lived in the ghetto. But in the middle of Detroit in the ghetto was the great neighborhoods. And Smokey said they went to the house to see Reverend C.L. Franklin, and they could hear this little girl on the piano playing. Mm-hmm. It was Aretha Franklin.
Wow.
She taught herself how to play the piano.
Oh, yeah.
She could never
lot of entertainers were like that,
She could never read music, never learn how to read music. And, you know, her mom was a pianist as well. Mm-hmm. And so she grew up in a musical family and obviously
moved
around a little bit.
Married much? Sure.
Yeah, she had several husbands. One of her husbands was in a movie called Cooley High. Remember that movie, Cooley High?
Yeah.
What was his last name? Trumaine, I believe. He said one night he was married to her and he woke up in the middle of the night and he said he heard her playing the piano. Mm. He said he walked downstairs and she was smoking a cigarette. He said, gee, damn, I can't believe I'm married to Aretha Franklin. But she was married several times. But she's been sick since 2010.
So, and her mom died when she was very young. She was raised by her father.
76.
Raised by her father.
Died the same day Elvis Presley died.
Had her first baby when she was 13.
Mm-hmm.
How many kids total?
I want to say 4.
I don't remember that.
Any entertainers ever have, like, one spouse their whole life?
No, because you're in that different world, man. Well, how many people in regular life have one spouse?
Yeah, nowadays.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm an entertainer.
Any salespeople out there have one?
I'm an entertainer. I've only had one, and I'm done. That's it. Mm. I quit.
Well, I mean, you didn't have a whole lot of options there.
No, I had lot of options.
You're saying no one wanted to marry?
I have a lot. I could have been remarried again maybe 10 different times. I just don't want to do it, man. Mm. That was one of the worst things that ever happened to me in my life. I can't say never, but no. I could have been married within 6 months after my divorce.
Yeah.
No. No, ain't no way, like Aretha Franklin sang.
All right. A couple other hot topics in the sports world. You're going to have Joey Vitale on radio today, and that was the big story of the week in hockey.
It was, you know, I mean, for here locally, I mean, obviously he's been named as the Blues radio analyst, you know, known Joey for a long time, you know, played hockey in the area, went to Northeastern University, and he was the captain there as a junior and a senior, which in college hockey is not normal or usual, I should say, to be the captain as a junior. Typically they give the senior class or somebody who's a part of the senior class the C on their jersey. But then he played in Pittsburgh, and he's, you know, his career ended suddenly, you know, I mean, because of a fight, took a punch, and he never played again. Really dealt with some serious concussions. We might get into that a little bit today, but obviously I'm excited for him because he's such a great person and so deserving of the job. He's going to be a great fit down there.
Okay, now you explain this to us. Mm-hmm. For a guy who's never done broadcasting in his life, mm-hmm. how do they mm-hmm. determine this is the guy that should be on 50,000 red-hot watts on this prominent hockey radio broadcast?
Well,
how did they do it?
Well, first off, they had an audition, okay, where, you know, Chris Kerber gives them an actual game to prepare for. And, you know, in that game, you get your game notes. I mean, you have to know exactly what's going on, you know, in terms of, you know, the players who are playing, who's in the lineup, who may not be in the lineup in the previous game. You know, was there an injury in the previous game that led to somebody being inserted? Did somebody get called up? And you have to prepare. You got to know your stuff. And he did a one-period audition.
So he and Curbs are watching the game on TV and doing a radio broadcast.
Curbs is doing the play-by-play, and he's got his color analyst to his right. And listen, you know, this guy knows the game. I mean, obviously, he's been around the game for a long time, and he's certainly comfortable talking about hockey. Is there going to be a learning curve? There's no question. I mean, he's never done it before. But with that being said, I mean, he's talking about something that he knows probably the most about, which is, you know, the game of ice hockey. He had one-on-one interviews with Chris Zimmerman. He met with Tom Stillman. Same with Mike Caruso and Steve Chapman down there. He had a one-on-one interview with Doug Armstrong. And to a man, he was their recommendation. This is the guy that they wanted.
So he went through five interviews, you just mentioned.
Yeah, I mean, this was a long process. I give the Blues a lot of credit for just how thorough they went about this and making sure they got the right guy. And people would be shocked to hear about some of the names who interviewed. I mean, there's a lot of people who interviewed.
You want to throw any out or not?
Well, we'll throw some out maybe later. But there's a lot of individuals who interviewed. Interested in the position.
Later is Saturday.
Yeah. Meet Joey, it's hard not to walk away being impressed, right? He's just a great individual. So maybe he doesn't have the same experience.
Great family man.
He's got three kids. Maybe doesn't have the same broadcasting experience that some of the others have, but you know he's going to be a no-maintenance color analyst who's going to be prepared. The players are going to love him. Here's the thing about him. Let me just say this about him also. You know, he's a lot more relatable to the current player than probably some of the others who interviewed for the position. Not to say that he's a better broadcaster or should have gotten it over some of those other guys. Don't read into it the wrong way. But, you know, when you're talking about Ryan O'Reilly, who's coming to the Blues, and Tyler Bozak, you know, he played against those guys. You know, he played with Robert Bortuzzo in the Pittsburgh organization where they were roommates in the minors. He was in training camp with Chad Johnson, not Ocho Cinco, but the other Chad Johnson, who's coming into the organization as a backup goaltender. So, again, he knows these guys. He can walk into visiting locker rooms around the league. And there's going to be guys in those dressing rooms who know Joey Vitale because he's pretty current.
You know, you got to be careful every word we say on the show.
Yeah.
You as well as what I do. Uh-huh. You said he's going to be low maintenance. Yeah. Explain that.
What I mean is he's going to come to work every day. He's going to have a smile on his face, and he's going to be prepared.
Wait a minute. That's not what low maintenance means.
What does it mean?
What is he going to get in trouble or something? Maintenance? What do you mean maintenance?
I mean, you don't have to babysit this guy. You don't have to worry about whether or not he's going to be.
So the other people were babysitting?
No. But I'm just saying that's just who he is.
I see what I'm saying.
Chuck was like an attorney there. He went around.
Wait a minute.
Typical media member.
No. But a typical media member wouldn't have said anything to you. The typical media would have just let you just walk on by.
Yeah.
Like with Dionne Warwick. No, this ain't walking on by. I want to know what maintenance means.
I met him like really for the first time about 3 months ago at Como Coffee, and he was there selling his sourdough bread.
Mm-hmm.
The guy makes the best bread in town. He was going to be a bread baker as a full-time job.
Really?
He was cooking it out of his house, and I'm telling you, we bought five loaves.
Yeah.
And then
he's been doing that for a long time. And, you know, he went and worked with an apprentice in San Francisco several months ago where he traveled back and forth. I think he was there for something like 9 weeks. And, you know, learn from an apprentice. You know, his plan was, you know, he's done my show before in the past. You know, his plan was to open up a cafe in Webster or Clayton or Kirkwood, somewhere where there's a lot of
traffic.
Is this
a live show with him today as a taped already?
You know, Schneidhorst,
can I
come
by and meet him?
If you want to, man.
I want to come by and meet him.
Don't scare him,
though. You know, those guys, by the way, off the topic, those guys that bake bread or make donuts, they're all so good at what they do.
They get up early in the morning.
Yeah, but just imagine the profit. You sell a donut for like 50 cents or a loaf of bread for $100. And they work like they're dogs.
$2.10 for a bag of flour.
Real quick. You know, when his career ended because of concussions, and, you know, I've talked to a number of players who have been in this situation before, Chris Pronger being one of them. You know, they can be in a pretty dark place. Especially when you're a hockey player or a professional athlete and you can't participate or play in that sport anymore, and you're 30 years of age, 31 years of age, whatever your age is, you're in your 30s mostly, or 20s, and you just don't know what you're going to do next. You don't know where to turn, what to do. And it can be a very lonely, difficult situation to be in, especially when you're going through a concussion and you don't feel well and you have to deal with all the issues that come with a head injury. And he used making bread as part of his therapy.
Does it help that you have a lot of money?
That was part of his therapy, too.
Part of his therapy.
Really? Wow, cool.
A doctor recommended that for him?
No, he didn't. making bread, you were just on a roll today with some of these comments. But he would make bread and use that as part of his therapy. He started to feel better just working with the dough and working his hands with the dough. Interesting, you know, we talked about that before. We'll probably get back into that today.
You're right, though. There could not be a nicer guy.
Watch what you say. No, I want to meet this guy. I want to meet this guy.
Charlie, you used to hang out
with
him.
I don't
want to
meet him.
You leave your door open there all the time.
Okay.
You ever hear the tuna story of the Sunday morning?
What's that?
So Tuna's car is parked outside at Schneidhorst, and we're coming back from church. I got three kids in the car and Monique, and we're walking in, and Dom says, "Hey, Dad, isn't that Mr. Tuna's car?" I said, "Yeah, it is. That's a good-looking Porsche." He goes, "Yeah." He goes, "Well, the door's wide open. The whole door, the side door's open. You gotta go in there and tell
I was hungry.
Terrible wheels, though, by the way. We got to talk about those wheels.
Oh, my God.
Get some black wheels, man.
He's parked next to Frank's car. I mean, your car looks like
you know I'm parked out in the lane.
It looks like a Dodge Dart next to Frank's car.
Okay,
yeah. I thought it was
sure,
a Dart. Actually.
Sure.
I thought
get on the road with me afterwards.
Charlie, one other topic, and Andy, before we go to break. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar wrote a piece recently trying to compare NFL players' protest of the national anthem to slaves being forced to sing songs and do hymns while they're picking cotton.
He's not the only one
to
say that.
Other people have said that. Charlie's regurgitated that. But do you think,
let me throw this at you.
Just can't get the feeling what he's saying, though, Frank. Unless you're a minority. I'm serious.
But, I mean, the slaves, they lost all their human rights.
Well,
and they were treated like dogs. It's horrible.
In the modern era, some of these players feel the same way. You've got the master. First of all, the NFL owners don't own players, okay? They're paying them a salary. And some of the players feel that way. And it comes from the background of back in the slavery days. And that's just the way some of these guys feel. It's just hard to explain to a different race of people how they really feel. And that's how they feel. And I feel the same way. And Jerry Jones just takes it to another level. But what this does, again, the NFL should have curtailed this months ago. Now they've got a big eyesore.
So the fact that the average NFL salary is $2.2 million and being compared to a slave.
Well, the way they're treated. They're talking about treated.
Treated. Yeah. How are they treated, bad? Charlie, you just tell,
Andy,
tell us.
First of all,
you tell us how
you have no comeback at that because you don't know what a black man lives every day.
Well, you got to explain yourself.
This is your last
you
show, young man.
You can't
get your tape recorder out and listen to a real black man.
You make a comment, now you got to explain what that means because people want to know what that means. So how
you got a master coming out, and they call the
Who's
back
the
in the day, the back in the slave days, they called the slave owner the master.
Yes.
Okay. Mr. Gilmore's property, all right?
Okay.
And what the owners of the NFL are doing is the same thing what the slave master did to the slaves back in the day. Barring taking away the money part. But Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is not the only one that has said this, Frank. Many of the black leaders, even Aretha Franklin came out and said it several months ago. That's just the way these players feel.
All right, we'll take a short time out. When we come back, he's 50 years old. He's the 50th manager in Cardinal history, and he's the talk of the town, Mike Schilt.